Good afternoon, fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting from Olympia, Washington, where a lot is happening. The legislature is in session. Keep your hand on your pocketbook. Let me tell you something. It is unbelievable here right now. Brought to you once again by the Committee to Elect Matt Shea, Republican, and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong, about our hope not being in man, but in Jesus Christ, about not ending in prayer, but moving to action. And Luke 17, 20 through 21. Now, having been questioned by the Pharisees as to when the kingdom of God was coming, he answered them and said, "The kingdom of God is not coming with signs to be observed, nor will they say, 'Look, here it is,' or 'There it is,' for behold, the kingdom of God is in your midst," or some translations, "is inside you." And that should be spurring us to action. And there is so much happening in Olympia right now, I can't begin to describe it to you. This is the worst session I have ever witnessed in all my years in Olympia. It is the most anti-Christian session. It is the most anti-gun session. It is the most unconstitutional session in many of the bills that have been introduced. And we're going to be talking quite a bit about that today. But once again, I have joining me co-hosting John Jacob Schmidt from Radio Free Readout. JJ, thanks for being on again, man.
Hey, awesome. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure. I really enjoy working with you, and thank you for all the work that you're doing in Olympia. It's monumental. I know there's so few patriots right now that it's so many people are talking about what you're doing, what several others are doing. It's an uphill battle. But you're rolling your sleeves up and you're engaging every day, and it's encouraging to everyone knowing that somebody's fighting for them, for their rights.
Yeah, and they always have to come after the right to bear arms, because that's what protects all the other rights.
Oh yeah.
And that's why we have our guest today, very special guest, Michael Hammond, Legislative Counsel for the Gun Owners of America, joining us to talk about everything happening in Washington. Michael, thanks once again for being on Patriot Radio. It's been a while, my friend.
Well, thanks for having me. Hello, Matt. Hello, JJ. Hello, Washington State.
So, yes. Gun Owners of America is uncompromising on the right to bear arms issue. Yep. And there's so much going on around the country. If you could, Michael, give us a little bit of a flavor of what's happening around the United States so folks in Washington don't feel like it's maybe just happening in isolation here.
Well, basically, they're doing the same around the United States that they did in Washington maybe 5 years ago. Here in Washington, D.C., the anti-gunners are coming to us, and their chief objective for this year is these universal background checks. That is, they ban private sales of firearms. They put a whole lot of trap doors that will put law-owning gun owners in prison because they sold a gun to an in-law or because they didn't realize their hunting partner didn't have a license, or all of these technical problems, this universal background check would end up putting the gun owner in prison. Finally, it would essentially require everyone to have a 4473. We know BATF is going around and copying or photographing in a computer-readable form 4473s in connection with annual inspection. So if everyone has a 4473, then everyone is going to be in BATF's National Gun Registry. And I know that the anti-gunners will tell you, oh, no, we specifically say you can't do a gun registry. Guess what? In 1986, in the McClure-Volkmer bill, I, who was the manager of that bill, wrote language into law saying you can't have a national gun registry. If BATF doesn't think it's violating the law that I wrote, how is it that saying the same thing a second time is going to make any difference with them? I mean, what are they going to do, be put on double super secret probation? So right now in Washington, the big question is the effort to push this universal background check, which you saw in Washington State not so long ago. And the same representation is being made here as was made in Olympia. And that is, if you pass these things, we're going to make you safe. This is what's going to take for you to be safe and for your children to be safe. The same thing is being done, incidentally, in states around the country with these, we call them gun confiscation orders. They're called alternatively red flag laws or ERPOs. But I think it's good not to use the other side's lingo. So we call them gun confiscation orders. You may remember they came to Olympia a few years ago and said, well, if we can confiscate people's guns because we subjectively think they're dangerous, then we'll keep you safe. It turned out that neither universal background checks nor gun confiscation orders keep anyone safe. As a matter of fact, they make them more endangered because they're not able to defend themselves and their community. What they did, in fact, was create a momentum for the anti-gun movement. It strengthened them. It got them more money. It got them a sense of success, and it allowed them to now move to Initiative 1639, to now move to the magazine bans, which are being considered on Olympia, to move to the anti-First Amendment suppression of speech over the internet in connection with the code for printing a 3D gun. I mean, if there's one thing, and I've been in this game for a long, long time. I've been in this town 43 years. And if there's one thing I know about gun control, it's that gun control never works. The only purpose is to put points on the board for the anti-gunners and to destroy what they perceive to be the strongest remaining pillar of the conservative movement, that is, the Second Amendment community.
So I really want to hone down on this. It really appears Washington is an experiment, Steve. They think they can get, you know, you started with universal background checks and then I-1639, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. But it started with that, and then they figured we can pass it in Washington. We can see what all the counterarguments are, and then we can see how to win. And they poured millions and millions and millions of dollars in to get the universal background check initiative passed in Washington. And then they figured they can take this around the country, really?
Yeah, they'd passed in a few states before then, but we are in Washington, D.C., where you were 5 years ago in Olympia, with them saying, oh, if we pass universal background checks, if we pass gun confiscation orders, we won't need any gun control because you'll all be safe. It didn't make anyone safe. It's not going to make anyone safe. As a matter of fact, if you look at every mass shooting since Columbine, universal background checks wouldn't have prevented a single one.
That's
not
right.
A single one. Every case, the individual who did the mass shooting passed a background check, or alternatively, as in Newtown, killed his mother and stole her guns. So it wouldn't have made any difference in any mass shooting. It's just an exercise in creating momentum for those people whose ultimate goal is, as we see in New York City, as we see in California, their ultimate goal is to ban the private sale of firearms. And all of these are just steps toward that objective.
Exactly. And this is John Jacob here. Thank you for being with us.
Hi,
Michael.
John.
Hey, there is so much historical precedence to look back to see the failure of gun measures, or the measures to disarm citizens, that we know that it doesn't work. We know that they're lies. And they continue to actually repeat the same lies that have been repeated by other tyrannous governments for decades. So I think what I really love about Gun Owners of America is it is really a no compromise attack. It's going on the offensive for our gun rights. We can't stand to be lied to. And so really what this is not everybody studies history. So some of these lies are new to people. They're new arguments. They're new reasons why we should volunteer to disarm ourselves. So really, it comes down to an education process. And how are you guys doing? we're in the echo chamber. We're all pro Second Amendment. How is the effort coming to educate the populace, the people that don't study history, the people that are falling for lies easily? What's that effort looking like?
Well, in some ways it's going well, and I know that's probably cold comfort to you and Olympia, but our situation is this: as you may remember, not long after Parkland, Donald Trump sat down with a whole bunch of senators, including Dianne Feinstein, Joe Manchin, et cetera. And he committed to a whole bunch of things. He supported basically semi-auto bans. Yeah. He supported gun confiscation orders. He supported universal background checks. And what happened then is I was talking to the Associated Press that day about what Trump had said. And I said to the Associated Press that the guy who supposedly was going to be the Second Amendment's best friend had become the gun grabber in chief. Yeah. It turned out that that comment went viral, and it was quoted, I think, on the following Friday night by Dana Perino on The Five, and she argued about my comment, citing me by name, with Juan Williams. Well, Donald Trump was watching that program, and within 48 hours, he was sitting down having dinner with Chris Cox and Wayne LaPierre of NRA, wow, trying to figure out how he could make things good with the gun community again. Out of that meeting, what came out of it was this. He, by and large, backed off of most of the things he committed to Feinstein Manchin. The two things that moved forward and that NRA sort of tentatively said we won't oppose are these. First of all, Trump would promulgate a bump stock regulation. Now, those of you who have looked at the bump stock regulation, which is now in its 90-day period for you to turn in your bump stock, supposedly, know that there are a whole bunch of problems with that. Problem one is that the regulation defines an automatic firearm in a way which is absolutely contrary to the statute. You can't rewrite a statute with a regulation. It's just unconstitutional and illegal to do that.
Right.
The second problem is that the bump stock regulation would, and it says it, in the final rule. It says, well, the bump stock is a machine gun because it turns the AR-15 into a machine gun. Well, hold on a minute. If it turns the AR-15 into a machine gun, the same rule makes the AR-15 illegal as well. Now, I don't think Trump is going to come tomorrow and take your AR-15, but I can tell you, if in 2021 Kamala Harris is president of the United States, she's going to come for your AR-15, and it's not going to be grandfathered, and she's going to demand that it be turned in immediately. And guess what? She doesn't have to do anything new. She can just use the Trump regulation to achieve that.
Exactly.
The third problem, of course, is the Constitution has this inconvenient thing in the Fifth Amendment called the Takings Clause. You cannot tell someone for 10 years that's legal to have something, and then all of a sudden say, we've changed our mind, you have to turn in your $300 piece of property at the nearest ATF office, and guess what? We're not going to pay you anything, and we're going to require that you sign a form saying you waive all of your constitutional rights. Gun Owners of America has sued to challenge that. And at least initially, I think the litigation, which is in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals out of Cincinnati, is going pretty well. It's the most pro-gun circuit of all the 13 circuits in the country.
Right.
And I think we're going to win that. So that was the first concession which NRA and others made. The second concession was these gun confiscation orders. And you may remember there were a whole lot of articles And there were a whole lot of articles at the time saying, well, no, this is the bipartisan gun control which we all can support.
Yeah.
And you may remember also that even Fox Television, Fox Cable, had this little piece saying, well, it's already in effect in Seattle, and it shows you how well these things work, that the Seattle police have gotten 28 out of the 29 gun confiscation orders they asked for. Hold on a minute. I think what that tells me is that when someone comes in one of these secret court proceedings in which a gun owner is not allowed to participate, and the proceeding can be done in some cases by a telephone call, the judge will sign a ham sandwich. And that's what happened in Seattle, pursuant to your gun confiscation order legislation. A whole lot of people ended up with police visiting them in odd times of the day or night without notification because of a judge who simply rubber-stamped an order based not on the fact you've committed a crime or will ever commit a crime, but the subjective notion that you, quote, may be dangerous.
You know,
so that's the second thing. That was sort of probably a longer explanation than you wanted. That's the second thing we're fighting. We have succeeded in stopping it, with the possible, with the exception of Florida, and the kids did a mob scene in Tallahassee and got Florida passed some bad stuff right after Parkland. But with the exception of Florida, we have basically limited the passage of gun confiscation orders to eight, aside from the five that already passed them, including Washington State, to eight really nasty anti-gun blue states. So we've largely turned that around, and in most of these states, they tried to pass them in about another 30 states. We stopped them in every red state and every purple state, and in most of those states now, NRA has flipped as a result of pressure from us and is fighting alongside us against these gun confiscation orders.
Good.
So those are the two big things that are happening nationally.
You know, and I remember having the debate, and people are saying, "Oh, it's hyperbole. You're reading into this. This is a conspiracy theory. This isn't confiscation." And we were saying, "This is going to be confiscation. This is confiscation. That's exactly what this is." And it was poo-pooed, and it ended up once again that Gun Owners of America was on the front line saying the exact same thing. And we were fighting, an uphill battle, and now it seems like the tide is shifting. Except in Washington State, we had an initiative. We were able to block a lot of this stuff in the legislature, but then we had an initiative, 1639, which does all kinds of things with safe storage. And if you could, tell the listeners a little bit about that and what you think the impact of 1639 is going to be around the country. And also the sheriffs that have now weighed in on this and said, enough.
Yeah, well, 1639 is, once more evidence that if you just because you pass what the gun control movement and Michael Bloomberg are now telling us in Washington will solve the problem, it doesn't solve the problem. It just strengthens the Bloomberg organization and allows them to move to their next step. The next step was Initiative 1639. Among other things, with respect to semi-automatics, disarmed, I think unconstitutionally probably, people who are 18 through 20 years of age. So, incidentally, these people can go off to Iraq in Baghdad, and they'll hand them a full auto to patrol the streets of Baghdad and shoot the place up. And then when they come back to America, all of a sudden their little brains are too immature to handle a semi-automatic firearm, which is sort of interesting because the left is knocking itself out to ensure that 18 to 20 year olds are registered to vote. So, presumably they can't be trusted to exercise other constitutional rights. In addition, there are a whole lot of new requirements, if you want to get semi-auto, a training requirement, a requirement that your sheriff certify that you are not a prohibited person, which is what I thought the Brady check was supposed to be. But
right.
If the sheriff certifies it, it means that, lo and behold, they have a gun registry of semi-automatics. And guess what has happened in most states that have had gun registries of semi-automatics? They have begun to ban them, and lo and behold, they had a handy list of addresses they need to go to.
That's right.
Finally, I think probably the worst aspect of 1639 was a provision saying that if you kept your firearm loaded in your nightstand and a prohibited person, quote, could potentially gain access to it, mm-hmm. and in fact did, then
right.
you were a criminal. Now, I'll tell you a little story. My brother lived in Kansas City in a dangerous neighborhood, and he woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and a drug dealer was standing over his bed. And mm-hmm. he reached into his nightstand, pulled his loaded gun out, stood the guy down until police arrived, and I'm convinced that had he not had that loaded gun in his nightstand, he would have lived about 2 decades less than he in fact did. So in Washington, now if you have that loaded gun in your nightstand and some prohibited person gets a hold of it, you're a criminal. Now, incidentally, in my opinion, in my legal opinion, the guy who gets a hold of it could be the felon who's burglarizing your house.
Right.
He's almost certainly a prohibited person. So the bottom line is, if you keep a loaded gun for protection in your house, you're just a felony waiting to happen. Now, all this is being challenged in court. I suspect, let me say this. We at GOA are challenging New York's treatment of people who want to keep firearms in their home, and the Supreme Court has just agreed to hear that. What that tells me is that the Supreme Court, probably by a 5-4 decision, is going to determine that New York's law to basically make it virtually impossible to keep a firearm in your home for self-protection is unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
And if it holds that New York's law is unconstitutional, I think the next step is to take Initiative 1639 up to the Supreme Court and argue that basically we're dealing with the same thing in Seattle as we are in New York City.
Yeah, I cannot agree more. I think that right now, trying to piecemeal things, these entire bills are unconstitutional. You don't go after just one section of it, which leaves the rest of the law in place. You go after the entire thing, and there's very clear grounds for doing that, not just with the U.S. Constitution, but like Article 1, Section 24 of the Washington State Constitution, which says shall not be impaired. And in addition to that, what we've also been talking about, this idea of kind of ex post facto, you know, implications with this. Absolutely.
Yeah, now we have I hope that the ex post facto clause of the Constitution is going to have more force. We raised it with respect to the Lautenberg Amendment back in 1996. You remember what that did. That said, well, if you committed a, quote, domestic misdemeanor, you're a prohibited person. And guess what? If you committed that back in 1950 and pled guilty in exchange for no prison time, then you're still a prohibited person
right.
for something that happened 46 years before. So we argued that it was an ex post facto law. The courts at that time, my own feeling is that you remember the Heller case, basically a 5-4 case, saying that an individual had a right to keep and bear arms. It was an individual right, not just a right of a state to have a militia. But as a condition of voting for that, Justice Anthony Kennedy, who was a Reagan appointee and a lifelong squish,
yeah.
Was persuaded by former Justice Stevens to insist on a whole bunch of language saying, okay, yeah, it's an individual right, but it doesn't stop the states from basically ignoring it in a whole bunch of instances. Kennedy's gone now. He's been replaced by Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, both of which I think are going to be a lot more pro-Second Amendment. So hopefully the Supreme Court is now going to make Heller meaningful. It's going to make this, at least as far as the courts are concerned, and certainly just because the courts decimate the Constitution doesn't mean the Constitution goes away. It just means the courts are acting unlawfully. But I think the Supreme Court and probably the lower courts now are going to increasingly start overturning these questionable statutes, which up until now, even after Heller and McDonald, have left in place.
You know, this is speaking of prohibited persons, minors, of course, fall under that. And I know what Oregon's pushing for it in Washington, but, you know, I don't know who are the people who decide to arbitrarily decide when someone has the inherent God-given right to defend themselves. Because I remember several cases, one just a couple of years ago, where a 14-year-old boy retrieved his father's AR-15 when a couple of thugs were kicking the door in, and it was just him and his sister home. At home alone, he felt, you know, threatened. Yeah. Felt his life was in
and
danger.
And he used that in order to save his family.
Absolutely. And what happens inside your home? Of course, this is the argument of the left. You know, the government shouldn't have any say over what happens in your home or in your bedroom or, you know, your domicile. But here's where their duplicity shows, the hypocrisy of their arguments. And I know my children, I've raised all of my children to safely handle firearms, never to touch them when I'm around, when I'm not around. And but they all know that if they're found in a situation like that to, you know, use whatever means necessary to defend themselves or their younger siblings. And so there's just such poor logic behind all of their arguments.
Yeah. Well, to give you a little history from my own personal life, I was in high school in the 1960s during the Vietnam War. I was in junior ROTC as a 14-year-old. When I was 14 years old, I was issued an M1 semi-automatic firearm. Mm. It didn't have a firing pin, but you certainly couldn't tell that to look at it. Pretty easy to put in a firing pin.
Sure.
And we cadets, 14 years old, walked up and down the halls of the school with our semi-automatic rifles, up and down the sidewalk in front of the school, back and forth across the playground, in uniform, out of uniform, in formation, out of formation. And this was not a nice suburban high school. This was pretty much ghetto high school. And it didn't occur to anyone that we were going to shoot up the place.
Right.
The year after I graduated from high school, 1968, Congress enacted the Gun Control and Safe Streets Act of 1968.
Yep.
Immediately thereafter, as a result of basically the massive infusion of drugs into the United States, homicide rates in every major city went through the roof. I mean, 2,000 a year in New York City, 500 a year in Washington, D.C. And so in a time in which 14-year-olds walked around with semi-automatic rifles, the country was safe. In a time in which guns became, for the first time, heavily regulated, the country all of a sudden fell into a massive crime epidemic. I'll tell you another coincidence. The 1996 Congress passed the Cole Amendment, which for the first not for the first time, but basically outlawed guns in schools. Within a couple of years of that going into effect, Columbine happened. And since Columbine, as a result of all the attention given that by the anti-gunners, since Columbine, there has been nothing but a nonstop series of copycat mass murders. that in my opinion, probably aren't ever going to stop. That wasn't a thing when guns were illegal in schools. Now that guns are illegal in schools, basically the only thing that law says to killers is, hey, here's a school. You can come. You can shoot up the place. You can kill lots of kids. You can get your 15 minutes of fame, and you don't have to worry that anyone is going to shoot back.
Well, that's the other argument as well, or I guess the other point to make is that almost all of these mass shootings are taking place in soft target gun-free zones, quote unquote. And it just doesn't seem like we're getting it. We're not learning it.
Yeah, all of them are – I mean, I guess Giffords wasn't, but almost – as you say, almost all of them are committed in gun-free zones for one reason or another. And almost all of them are committed by people who pass background checks. These were the things we were told would make us safe, but I don't think even the gun grabbers actually believed that would make us safe. I think it's a situation like, well, cigarettes or seat belts or anything else, in which certain people actually despise guns, despise the fact that private individuals can own them, absolutely want to outlaw private ownership of firearms.
Yes.
And are just working cut by cut in order to get themselves to that ultimate objective.
Michael Hammond of Gun Owners of America, if you could comment briefly on these magazine bans, right? That's gonna make everything better, and we can compromise. You know, we can compromise at 15 round magazines. Doesn't have to ban everything or two. 15-round magazines will compromise, and that's compromise.
Yeah, and then it's five. Seven in New York. Actually, right. That was the only part of the SAFE Act, which by those liberal courts was declared unconstitutional, but it was. Now it's 5 rounds, I think, in California that they're going for. And my own feeling is that the magazine bans, and I guess there's one now moving in Olympia, are simply an effort to ban the gun without saying you're banning the gun. It's a roundabout way to ban firearms by banning or making extremely rare the magazines which would be used in them. So increasingly here in Washington, I think there's magazine ban is in the same location as the semi-automatic ban itself, and I think there's a realization that both of them would achieve the same objective, to ban guns which don't have any more kinetic power than shotguns, but right. Have big nasty features which scare liberals, or which liberals use to try to scare other liberals.
So, Michael Hammond, if you could, before you go, tell listeners where they can go to find out more about Gun Owners of America.
Gun Owners of America, .org is our website. Visit our website. We have, I think I write most of our alerts, but we two or three times a week put out alerts, sometimes dealing with to a particular state, like Washington State, dealing with particular issues there, sometimes national alerts. But you don't, it just costs $20 a year to join our organization, but you don't have to join our organization to be on our alert network. And even if you're not willing to put up the $20, we urge you to become a part of our network so you can be kept informed of what's going on concerning the Second Amendment.
And what can listeners specifically do right now? What should they be doing right now here in Washington State to push back against this just mountain of gun control bills that we're facing?
Well, in Washington State, I would say that there at least I'm told by you guys, three bills which are moving, which you consider a danger. First of all, your magazine ban. Secondly, your 5-day theft reporting requirement. That's sort of interesting because in most states that have passed legislation like that, if you have a large gun store and it inherently from time to time someone shoplifts a gun or whatever, all of a sudden you're potentially a felon as a result of that. It's interesting that here in Washington, D.C., a major source of guns on the street was the police armory, which just leaked like a sieve. Guns were going right and left out the door of the police armory headed for drug gangs in this city. Wow. So I guess my question is, if the police can't keep track of stolen guns, why is it that they can turn an individual into a felon for not being able to do the same? The third thing is this 3D gun legislation, which essentially would not only impede the Second Amendment, but impede the First Amendment. They call it cleverly as a means of trying to make guns look as evil as possible, the ghost gun bill. But the guns actually are not ethereal ghosts. They're actual guns, although they're probably going to need, under current standards, enough metal to show up in a metal detector in order to make sure they don't blow up in your face. What they're doing is nothing less than banning internet speech because they don't like the content of it. The bottom line is these are the three bills which I think are of most danger right now in Olympia. I suspect we'll do an alert on the three. If plug into our system, write your representatives in Olympia and tell them that you oppose this legislation, that it's unconstitutional under the Second Amendment, but unconstitutional under the First Amendment as well.
Michael Hammond, Gun Owners of America, thanks once again for joining me on Patriot Radio, and just really appreciate all the efforts you do all over the country. It's tireless. God bless you and everything that you guys are doing, and look forward to having you on again.
God bless you.
Thank you, Michael.
All right. Well, JJ, I want to go through a few more things that we've been facing here. One in particular is this huge push, and Friday it's coming up, this huge push to mandate vaccinations here in Washington State. I hear these ridiculous – I got messaged by somebody because I asked a simple question about if these vaccines are so effective, then what are you afraid of, right? If somebody's not vaccinated but you're vaccinated, right? And they come back, well, there's immune-suppressed people and da-da-da-da-da. Okay, and they bring the elderly up. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about kids in school. You see
that's right, children.
Yeah, you see the logic shift. And then they say things like this. You have a 1 in a million chance of being harmed by vaccinations, when in fact in Washington State you are 4 times more likely to be vaccine injured than you are to die of the measles. And they have an entire tens of millions of dollars at the national level dedicated to a fund to pay out for vaccine injuries. Right, but that's not.
But that wouldn't be necessary, right?
You see what I mean?
Yeah, I'd love to see the numbers of how much they've actually paid out.
Exactly.
Wouldn't that be something?
I think it's probably available online. I don't have it in front of me, but here's the interesting part to me: my ability to defend my body.
Yes.
Okay. We just talked about the Second Amendment. So I want to tie this in. My ability to defend my body. My bodily integrity, okay?
Yes,
with the right to bear arms or with the right of conscience to say, no, I do not want a vaccine and I should not be punished for exercising my right of conscience.
That's right.
All of this is being eviscerated. Where do you think this leads?
Well, we're in a state of massive confusion and confliction because the very argument that they use to justify the murdering of unborn babies – is the argument they will not let you have when it comes to vaccinations, that you have the right to say what happens to your body. You have the supreme ultimate right over your body, even if it means murdering the child that's inside of it. But when it comes to vaccinations, and there's so much information out there now that's pointing to negative effects of vaccinations, they want to force you to put chemicals into your body that reports are showing can cause harm. And you do not get to say, I have the right over my own body to choose what I do with my body or what I put in my body or what I take out of my body or anything else. But when it comes to transgender surgeries or when it comes to abortion or anything immoral, you have the right to choose.
You have to. Otherwise, where does that end? Because every time some government bureaucrat is going to decide, hey, JJ, this time you really, really need to do this too, right? Because
right.
We know better than
What's
you do.
What's next?
Yeah, we know better than you do.
Right.
And, oh, by the way, this issue was settled at the Nuremberg trials. You cannot force people to do medical treatments.
I'm so glad you brought that up because I was just looking at a story earlier today on Drudge where they're taking human embryo from aborted embryos. And there's a headline right there. Aborted babies' body parts fused with mice for Frankenstein experiments. Now, this is something that should be placed into the annals of our culture, and that is to refuse, no matter how beneficial they think it is, because I mean all of the medical experiments that the Nazis did on prisoners is not even if there's beneficial discoveries from the torture and the horrible, unspeakable things that they did to people in the name of science and research. They're not able to use any of that, even if it would benefit mankind, because of justifying the ends by those evil means. But they're doing the same thing with unborn babies, saying that it benefits mankind. So it's another justification for murder, and so. That's I don't know. That's what I see. That's what I see happening. I don't see an end to it. One thing that this has revealed is the godlessness and the immorality of what we're up against. By saying you must take these vaccinations or your children must be forced to take these, even though we're seeing all these reports linking them to all kinds of other negative effects. They're justifying this with the same argument. They're justifying immoral behavior.
You know, I was looking at somebody throughout, you're a million times more likely or it's one in a million to get vaccine injured when in fact it's, four times more likely to be vaccine injured than die of the measles. Those are their own records. Those were given to us. And, even if those records are a little off and it's only like 2 in 1, it's still – one person that died of measles
that didn't have to.
And oh, by the way, if you take into account comorbidities, and this is so critical to understanding this issue, people that are dying of diseases that were already compromised in their health and were already susceptible of dying from something. It just happened to me, the measles that time. It could have been the flu, could have been a cold, could have been something else. You take that into account, you get a more accurate picture of this. But again, instead of getting stuck maybe in the details, especially for you out there that are Christians, okay, we need to get our worldview straight.
Yes.
There is a reason that the Christians in Russia and the former Soviet Union refused to do vaccinations. There's a reason for it, because that was a way, was a door that was opened as an avenue to persecute Christians. Folks, wake up on this stuff. Don't just say, oh, that's a conspiracy theory. That doesn't happen. We have been right calling this stuff for years and years and years. It's the other people that have the burden of proof to show why they should justify violating an unalienable right.
Exactly. And to further shed light on their hypocrisy is they're taking a culture which is relatively healthy – with diseases like polio and measles and rubella and mumps and things like this that we've essentially eradicated from our culture. And they're forcing the vaccinations on a people who are not confronting these, being confronted with these types of diseases, except from one place. And that is the illegal immigrant population. Where you see those population centers, that is where you're seeing the highest numbers of diseases that we've otherwise eradicated generations ago, and with some cases, like polio, for example. Now we're starting to see those diseases come back, and they are in the population areas consisting of people who came into the country without being vetted, without being quarantined, without being evaluated, and they're bringing these things in. And so now we've like created this
created crisis.
Exactly. We've created the crisis, and now the solution is everybody has to get this shot.
Here's the other interesting part about this. So there are vaccine lines that came from aborted fetal tissue. Now, I had that confirmed to me directly by a lobbyist for Big Pharma, okay, who is a Christian. And some people say, well, that was back in the 1970s. It doesn't matter. It still came from that. But okay, if you have a problem and that doesn't sell you, and you're still kind of wavering on your worldview, just today, WorldNet Daily has an article. You can go look it up. According to the Sun newspaper of London, they were taking fetus parts. Okay, let's stop using the word fetus. Baby parts, and grafting them onto mice so they could do drug testing regarding infectious diseases.
Yep. That's the article that I stumbled across today.
I mean, okay, if I have a moral problem with that, I should be able to say no. I don't want to be a part of that. And I shouldn't get punished for exercising my unalienable right of conscience, because, again, where does that end, right?
Well, they get to decide on a whim where that ends. Everything that they decide is a further encroachment on your liberties. And we're not even talking about constitution worship or liberty worship. I got my rights. It's not about you. It's about allowing a world system to encroach further and further, that where it ends is, well, where it will end eventually is Christian persecution.
And I want to highlight this too. I want to read this from the article. WorldNet Daily reported this week the American Center for Law and Justice is seeking documents from the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease on its humanized mice program. I want to say that again. Humanized mice program. Quote, first, the creation of mice with human immune systems is horrific enough. Okay, what are they doing? This is macabre. This is incredible. First, the creation of mice with human immune systems is horrific enough, but that these mice are being created using the body parts of innocent babies is unthinkable. And I agree with that statement. Where does this stop? Where? I mean,
Well, already you've got the governor of Virginia arguing for killing of babies after they're born. So where it ends is going to be them deciding who lives and who doesn't, regardless of – it's basically essentially reducing the value of life to the point where somebody gets to arbitrarily decide who lives and who dies.
That's where this is headed. And you know, this German idea about life unworthy of living. Okay, that was the program under the National Socialists, right? And we are headed there again, folks. Do not fall into this. As Christians, don't fall into this trap. It is a trap, both from a worldview perspective, but ultimately from a strategic perspective of us being able to continue to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ and to make disciples unhindered. Everything that we're talking about is a reason that we need liberty state. Amen. Whether we're talking the right to bear arms, we're talking the right to life or the right of conscience, you know, or just not to have your studded snow tires ban. They got a bill on that, too.
Oh, like, my God. I heard about that. It's about controlling every facet of your life for your own good.
Right. This is coming from the people, too, who have a real hard time driving in the snow already, right? Right. They're
and they got more snow hitting the Puget Sound area. They're just all beside themselves. Now they're going to be, hey, maybe this will actually be in our favor.
Maybe.
Hey, look at all the accidents you could have avoided if you would allow these people to have studded snow tires.
So, and let's turn this around. What if I mandated studded snow tires? I want to mandate that you have to put on your car studded snow tires for the safety. Because look at cars.
Of the collective.
Yeah, of the collective, because cars kill more.
Absolutely.
Far more than we're talking about, you know, vaccine injuries and all stuff and diseases.
Yeah.
Car accidents, I mean, they're a leading cause of death, for goodness sake. Why don't we mandate studded tires? Because, you know, I mean, if you don't have a studded tire, you must not care about anybody else.
Absolutely. And the pharmaceutical companies can fund the repairs to the roads.
where does it go?
Wow. So yeah, I mean, you make a good point there. And I've often said, you know, just like, I wear a helmet. I'm a strong proponent of wearing a helmet on a motorcycle. But in Idaho and many other states, you know, it's an option. You get to choose. And you're the one that's going to face the consequences for not wearing a helmet if you get in an accident. Well, in Washington, they decided that they need to make that decision for you. You know, that they're happy about all the babies that they'll help fund to kill, but they don't want you bumping your head if you get in a motorcycle accident. You know, so how far does that go with cars? I mean, we know that the leading cause of injury leading to death in car accidents is head injuries. So why don't we mandate helmets for riding in cars?
This is exactly, and this is really kind of the emasculation. You know, we talk about toxic masculinity and how ridiculous that is, but this is the emasculation of people, because we suddenly don't need to be tough anymore, too. We don't need to think for ourselves. I mean, what are we going to do? Roll around in a big padded bubble everywhere we go? I mean, come on.
Maybe that's next.
Or maybe it's surrogates, you know, with Bruce Willis, you know, where we sit in our little thing and these little robots do stuff for us.
There you go, AI. We'll just sit there and, yeah.
But the robots, we need to give them rights, so maybe they have studded tires.
Well, they will have rights because they'll be so human-like and so intelligent that they'll have to have their own set of rights.
And we'll have
That's what's coming.
What if we vaccinate the robots?
Well, you won't need to. They'll be superhumans, and they'll actually be able to develop policy for us because they won't have, you know, be making mistakes that humans would, and then they'll pretty much – people will be marrying them.
So we can just sit back and eat chips?
I guess so.
Right?
Like that cartoon with the robot where they all just sat around and they got fat. And everything was provided for them. They just tooled around these little mobiles that just – they didn't even have to walk anywhere.
Remember the comedy Bubble Boy? You know what I mean? I mean, that's where – I mean, really. Where does it stop? And that I hope is the question that you guys can talk about over the dinner table tonight. Because this is really where things are headed. And oh, by the way, it just so happens that all of these things happen to be issues that Christians generally agree on, that suddenly we're trying to either demonize or marginalize or legislate out of existence via the state and the bureaucracy and the governing. So what do you think? I mean, what should Christians be doing right now in the last 3 minutes we got?
Well, first of all, they need to change their worldview. Those who have not, and not really realize that we're living in this world, but we should not be of this world. And so many of these arguments, I've just basically come to the point now where any argument that the left makes, well, let's just also say Democrats, because they've essentially adopted the socialist communist platform. Anything they suggest, you automatically oppose it. And, I would say, you know, do your best to instill those values in your children and inculcate those. You know, just keep coming back to reinforce those values and those views. And I guess be deliberate about not living like the rest of the world. Being self-sufficient and self-reliant so that you don't have to have somebody else – pad your life and protect you from yourself and take ownership of your own affairs and your own life, your own safety, and be engaged in what's going on. Don't just be checked out and let what's happening in the world just kind of tool along on its own rail, and you're not involved. We're supposed to stand up for the righteous. We're supposed to intercede for the defenseless, and do righteousness. Those things, you know, the word calls us to do, and that all of those things require action, not inaction. And I think that people need to find a way to get active, actively engaged, and being light in their communities.
So Radio Free Redoubt, where can people go find out about it?
RadioFreeRedoubt.com for the podcast every Sunday night. And of course, we're right here. Well, not right here on ACN, but the KTW ACN affiliate out of Spokane every Saturday morning from 9 to 9:30, talking about these issues.
Exactly these issues. And for everybody else out there, make sure if you get a chance, share the podcast. I'm on Podbean, also yeah. on iTunes. We replay this on the American Christian Network at 9 p.m. as well, after live broadcast between 4 and 5. Just spread the word about it. Tell people about this. Get folks educated. And just please don't listen to the media. Go and look it up yourself. I know it's hard, but freedom is difficult sometimes, but
yep.
It's rewarding, isn't it?
PatriotRadio.podbean.com. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
Patriot Radio. And you can also just look up Matt Shea on iTunes and you'll find me on there. Sometimes I think I stick
and
out.
Share
like
them with your friends. Send the links to the audio files. If there's something that really struck a chord with you, share it with others.
Absolutely. Well, everybody, this is Matt Shea. JJ, thanks for joining me today. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation, and wait, stop, the greatest one by picking up your gun and putting down your latte. God bless
Amen.
You guys. Amen.